K248BR 97.5 in Santa Cruz and online at kpfa.org. Hard Knock Radio is next.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Fam, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. Up next on the program, we discuss comprehensive legislation regarding the way in which police function and operate in the United States. And then later on, we look at gentrification. All this and more ahead right after these news headlines.
I'm Christina Onnestad with these KPFA news headlines. After canceling a June summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un last week, President Trump says on Twitter today there still could be a future summit. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert says a Trump administration has been in communication with North Korea about the on and off again summit and will host a meeting this week in New York to discuss it.
Since the president's May 24th letter to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, the North Koreans have been engaging with the United States. The United States continues to actively prepare for President Trump's expected summit with leader Kim in Singapore. President Trump will meet with Prime Minister Shinzo Abe of Japan on June the 7th at the White House. I know Secretary Pompeo looks forward to being a part of those meetings. North Korean Vice Chairman of the Central Committee, Kim Yong-chul, is arriving in New York and will meet with Secretary Pompeo later this week. We also have a U.S. delegation meeting with a North Korean delegation in the DMZ.
Kim Yong-chul's visit to New York marks the highest-ranking North Korean official to travel to the U.S. in 18 years. Some 60 are dead after Israeli jets bombed Gaza hours after Islamic Jihad fired more than 25 mortar shells towards communities in southern Israel. It's what appears to be the largest single barrage since the 2014 Israeli-Hamas conflict. The Israeli military says no one was hurt earlier in the day and that most of the mortar shells were intercepted by the Iron Dome defense system. Islamic Jihad was believed to be behind the attacks with a green light from Hamas, which rules the Gaza Strip. Here's Khaled Abash, an Islamic Jihad leader in Gaza. His remarks were broadcast on Al Jazeera.
As long as there is an occupation, resistance is a legitimate right for the Palestinian people. We preserve all options, but we'll proceed with two, the mass public peaceful protests and preserving our right to respond to the Zionist occupation's crimes.
Israeli snipers have killed 110 unarmed Palestinians and wounded an estimated 12,000 in 2 months of protests at the Gaza border, bringing international condemnation from human rights groups and some foreign governments. Israel is now calling for international condemnation of Islamic Jihad's attack today. Net neutrality proponents gathered at the state capitol urging lawmakers to pass legislation they say would protect a free and open internet in California. San Francisco State Senator Scott Wiener says his bill, SB 822, would restore net neutrality protections put in place by the Federal Communications Commission under President Obama in 2015. Those protections were repealed under President Trump, and the new rules are set to take effect on June 11th.
FCC didn't just go back to pre-2015. They wiped everything away. As of June 11th of this year, there will be essentially no federal net neutrality protections. There will be nothing to stop internet service providers from engaging in the practice called zero rating, which has been banned in the European Union and which the Obama FCC was starting to enforce against, a practice where they say, hey, you use my product, it doesn't count against your data cap. If you use my competitor's product, it counts against your data cap. We are going to see real problems because we know that contrary to what some of the opponents are saying, net neutrality violations are real.
The largest telecommunications companies say Wiener's bill is too strict compared to the FCC's new rules. Washington State and Oregon have already passed net neutrality protection laws. Wiener's bill, if passed, would create what advocates say would be the most comprehensive net neutrality defense in the nation. Law enforcement agencies announced a coordinated effort to crack down on marijuana grows on public lands and the illicit black market today. U.S. Attorney McGregor Scott says there's so much illegal marijuana being grown on federal lands and trafficked to other states that he doesn't have the resources to target the nation's largest legal recreational marijuana market here in California. Federal law still bans pot, but Scott says he'll focus on interstate trafficking, organized crime, and damage to public lands. Authorities say pesticide use in forests associated with marijuana grows has exponentially increased. Last year, they found carbofuran, a chemical banned in California, on 78% of cannabis cultivation sites in national forests. I'm Christina Onnested reporting. Please join us at 6 for a full hour of the Pacifica Evening News. Hard Knock Radio's next.
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, news, views, and hip-hop.
This is Sister Soulja on Hard Knock Radio. Listen closely.
¿Qué pasa, raza? This is Deuce Eclipse, the Oi Joaquin, your parte chino. Check it out. Listening to Hard Knock Radio.
Hey, this is Patrice Rushen. And whenever I'm in the Bay Area and I need good information and great radio, it's all about Hard Knock Radio.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Sitting in front of me, standing in front of me, I should say, is somebody who is no stranger to our airwaves. His name is Ben McBride. He's a local activist. He's with the PICO Network, among other things. You may have seen him in the documentary. He was prominently featured in a documentary called The Force, which was dealing with police, least Oakland police, and Mr. McBride, who is an avid person that has stood firmly against police brutality, was shown doing his work trying to get sensitivity into that force. We see, we don't know if it's worked or not, but we'll find out as we're talking to him today. We have him on the show because there's been a lot of movement in Sacramento. I think people often think when we talk about police reform, they see marches in the streets, the shutting down of freeways. And the question that is always asked is, well, why don't you just go and vote it in or do some legislative work? And that's been happening all around the country. And we wanted to update folks on two things that are going on in Sacramento and let you know the forces that are at play so people can be very aware. So, Ben, welcome to the show. And how's life been since you've been featured in The Force?
Well, I think life as a black man in America and in the Bay Area continues to be the same reality. The blessing for me is just finding ways to go home safe every night, find ways to keep serving my wife and children and serving the community. I think it's just continue to be unfortunate to see the way in which black folks and brown folks and other marginalized communities are not seen as human with respect to engaging with law enforcement and the state. So I think we're all just trying to figure out how to keep surviving out here.
Before we get on to what's going on in Sacramento, let's look at a scorecard. We just recently saw the acquittal or the non-indictment of the Border Patrol, which is former police, being let off for the killing of a young man. I'm going to forget his name. That was in Arizona. We saw the non-indictment of police officers over in San Francisco, Mount Mario Woods. We saw the non-indictment of, I think it was a case in Atlanta. You know, there's just a long list of non-indictments of police. What does that mean? What is that saying? I know you mentioned that our humanity is not seen, but it seems like there's a line drawn in the sand that doesn't get crossed.
Sure. Well, it's all those names you named, and it also was Brother Luis Congora, his family, also from San Francisco.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah,
right. Many others that just are being are just being unfairly targeted. Look, I mean, here's the real deal. The real deal is that the policing apparatus, it's not set up to bring us the kind of justice that we're requiring. They are protected under the law to be able to do the kinds of things that they're doing. I'm not bringing any news to anyone who hasn't heard this before, but unfortunately, the reality is that when they are killing us in the streets, they are not breaking the law, which is the reason why we need to change the law. Now, I know there's a variety across the spectrum of different ideas around what it is that we need to do. Some who are anchoring ideas around abolition, others who are anchoring different ideas around radical reform. We obviously need to do something because right now they are not breaking the law because the whole system needs to be transformed as it exists around hiring, equipment, accountability, and training. We got to bring that HEAT, that acronym, to change that system because right now, according to the law, they're not doing anything wrong.
Right. And that was a Supreme Court decision some years back that basically said if an officer feels that their life is threatened, they can protect themselves. Thank you. And so, you know, that, so the excuse, I felt threatened, allows you to legally shoot. One of the other things that happened this past week, and you might have seen the article that I wrote, was looking at the recent elevation of police, at least voted. I don't know if it's been signed into law yet because there's a Senate bill that it goes even further, and Trump has made no pretense. He'll definitely sign it. But the police have been elevated to a protective class, meaning that hate crime penalties can be attached to you if you're arrested. So if we're arrested, as folks were when they stopped on the freeway, somehow they can look and say, well, he said something about the police, it's a hate crime, yada, 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 and they can add those penalties to, you know, your protests and definitely penalties if there's any sort of assault, because a lot of times when they arrest people, they say it's resisting arrest. There's some sort of minor thing that goes on, but all that gets enhanced now with hate crime legislation. What I was surprised to see was almost every member, except maybe four or five, of the Congressional Black Caucus mm-hmm. voted for this. We saw Keith Ellingson, you know, who's a Muslim, mm-hmm. who was in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. who saw Jamar Clark, yeah. and who saw Philando Castile mm-hmm. vote for this. We saw John Lewis, who has, you know, lived off the reputation of being beaten over the head in tear gas by police when they crossed the Edmonton Bridge in 1965. We saw Bobby Rush, mm-hmm. former Black Panther, who, you know, was, you know, who saw his friend and his chairman, Fred Hampton, and Mark Clark killed by the police in Chicago. How is this? And you know, for the record, Barbara Lee, if you're in the Bay Area, didn't vote for this. Maxine Waters, if you're down in L.A., did not vote for this. Al C. Hastings out of Baltimore did not vote for this. And I want to say Hank Jones, not Hank Jones, but Bobby Scott out of Virginia didn't vote for it. And there's one other person that didn't vote. I'm going to remember his name in a minute. But all the other people in the Congressional Black Caucus voted for this. How does this happen? What's the disconnect?
Because the powers that be that are roaming the hallways of not just our federal Capitol buildings, but also our state Capitol buildings, and mind you, also our local city halls. The powers that be when we are not present in the state Capitol are amazing. I remember I was at up at the state capitol a few years ago. And it was, you know, normally we have these days where different organizations, advocacy organizing groups, come up to lobby behind different bills that we want to lobby behind. And I came up on a day that wasn't one of those days. It was the days that some of the police unions and other corporate interests were up there lobbying. When we come up there, you know, we're rushed around. We're pushed kind of out of the rooms. We don't have only but 10 to 15 minutes to talk to you. When I came up there, there were folks walking down the street. I mean, walking down the hallways who had shoes that probably cost more than my whole suit. They had hot trays out in the hallways of mushrooms and wings and appetizers. When we go up to lobby, there's nothing there. But when the corporate interests and the power are there, there's all these appetizers and food for everyone. And I'm walking around, and that's when it really hit me even more deeply, right, that a lot of these folks who are elected officials are selling us down the river because they're making their deals behind big money and behind their next election. And the sad piece around what you just named around this hate crime bill, this Blue Lives Matter bill, this is incredibly important. When we went on the freeway in 2016 after the Philando Castile murder and the Alton Sterling murder, and some of those comments that I made were in The Force and were online. About several months later, I was doing a training in a community law enforcement space, and a former member of the LAPD who now works with POST came up to me and said,
"What is POST?"
POST stands for Peace Officer Standards and Training. They're actually the nonprofit organization that certifies all law enforcement's training in order for police academies, etc. Came up to me and told me, he was like, "You know, you might want to watch what it is that you're saying, because there were people lobbying that you should be arrested and put on the terror watch list because you said you were going to pull down Oakland Police Department brick by brick. And people want to label you a terrorist and put you on the no-fly list." Now, with this kind of legislation, that makes that threat that I and others faced 2 years ago a very realistic thing.
That puts you in the eyes of as a felon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When you've committed no crime.
Right? But if you all were arrested, I don't know if people were arrested that day.
They were. Some were.
Some were, you know, for getting in on the freeway. That now starts to be at, that looks and they go, "This is what he said."
Absolutely.
"He's on the freeway," and they start to multiply, you know, what should be a minor thing. Maybe a ticket and you are an appearance in court or a fine,
yep,
is now a felon.
And it's because they're being responsive to these other corporate interests, and too many of these elected officials have strawberry jam for spines. They're jelly backs, and they won't stand up for the people, and they won't stand up for what is right. And the reality is we're dealing with that right now here in California. We don't have to go all the way to Washington, D.C. When I was just at the Capitol 2 weeks ago, We were lobbying on behalf of many of these policing bills, Assembly Bill 931, Senate Bill 1421.
Yeah, hold that thought for 1 second. We're talking with Ben McBride from PICO. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about what is going on in Sacramento, looking at the legislative battles that are raging around police reform, police accountability. So we have you on the show. Obviously, you just mentioned it. There are two bills that are here statewide, and I want to just kind of break this down for a moment, because we were talking about what was going on the federal level.
Yeah.
So the police unions, the Fraternal Order of Police, the largest police union, has been all up in Capitol Hill,
yes,
lobbying to have these bills. So one bill that they just got is called the Blue Lives Matter bill. The other one that they're pushing is an extension of or national version of the Policeman's Bill of Rights, which is very strong here in California and about 20 other states, but they want to make that a national bill, which would make it almost impossible for you to get access to any police records. So if Johnny the police officer is a brutalizing officer, there's no way that an average person can find out his records. They would be sealed. If he's involved in a shooting, which is the case in California, you don't get the name. They have the discretion whether to release the name or not. And it goes even further. So we've been told over the years that you can't do things nationally, you know, and, you know, you even heard Barack Obama say that you have to do it locally.
Right.
So here you all are doing this locally. So you have two bills that are now put forth. And so let's set the stage for that. What are the two bills?
The two bills, SB 1421, that Senate Bill 1421, is the Right to Know Act. What this piece of legislation will do, just as Brother David D was just saying, it gives the public the right to know whenever an officer is gives us the records of the use of force, officer-involved killings, all the other different kinds of ways that officers are showing up in ways that are brutalizing our community. We get the access to know that information. It removes this veil of secrecy that allows officers to brutalize the community and be able to hide and then leave departments, be fired when they're suspended, when that does happen behind closed doors. And it does happen. But oftentimes what happens is they either get fired, resign, and they go right to another department because there's no public records that this officer is out beating, shooting, killing folks. And by the time we find out, it's usually after one of our loved ones has been killed. And then the name finally somehow gets leaked or released. And then when we do the homework on this person, we come to find out that this person has been a bad actor for some time.
So this is what happened to Alan Bruford, right? Mm-hmm. The officer that shot him originally came from New York with a bad record to mm-hmm. Oakland and then, you know, let out dirt here.
Absolutely. And you know, the fact of the matter is, doctors' records are not sealed. You have the opportunity to be able to know if study people's history and see if they've been prosecuted around malpractice and other different dynamics so that you can make the proper kinds of choices. The public has a right to know whenever police are using misconduct and brutality, and SB 1421 is going to get us there. Even furthermore, the next bill that's also incredibly important is Assembly Bill 931. Assembly Bill 931 is a use of force bill that came to be authored by Assemblymember Shirley Weber from San Diego after the Stephon Clark murder. And what this bill does is it changes the understanding of the law inside policing that they cannot discharge their weapon unless they have proof that they've seen a gun. It moves, obviously this isn't a panacea, but it moves the dial from the place of, I think I saw a gun, to having to cause them to have seen a gun before they can use lethal force. Now, here's what I will say. Are we advocates of lethal force? No, we're not. That's not what we're trying to be. But I think a part of us trying to transform this system means we want to figure out how to move the dial. And AB 931 is one of the most important pieces of legislation that we have had in the state of California around policing in 20 years. And it's being hard fought and trying to be killed by police unions.
So you mentioned going up to Sacramento on non-lobby days and seeing all these powerful interest groups there. Have you seen the police unions, and what has been the climate with respect to these two bills now being put forth and being, you know, put out and for the public to look at?
Absolutely. The police unions had been at the Capitol about 2 to 3 days before many community members, both from ACLU, Californians for Safety and Justice, PICO California, and many, many others who have been going to do lobbying at the Capitol around these bills. The police union had been up there and had began to lobby our elected officials, saying that they are concerned about the language. This is a clause that they've been using. We're concerned about the language, and that this bill, particularly AB 931, puts our officers in grave danger and disables their ability to do their job. The reason I want us to pay attention to this quote of we're concerned about the language is it's equally the same thing that they came out in their press conference after the announcement of AB 931. The police chiefs came out saying that they're concerned about the language. We got police unions and their lobbies showing up to talk to our elected officials saying they're concerned about their language. And then when we sat with staffers and elected officials in Sacramento, they use the same line, well, we're concerned about the language. So my concern is, for a lot of our elected officials, why are you saying what the California Police Chiefs Association is saying? Why are you saying what PORAC is saying? PORAC is a statewide largest organization for the police unions. Why are y'all saying what they are saying when you've been elected by the people and you need to be saying what we are saying? And that's why I think we all need to be bringing the hell fire of accountability down on our elected officials, that we don't want to hear nothing about your concern about the language. I want to hear about your concern for black and brown bodies in the street.
You have been at these police trainings, so you're familiar more than the average person. And if you can put on that hat for a minute, we're talking with Ben McBride, if you're just tuning in. One of the One of the tactics that are often used is that they'll get a reporter. And let me just kind of paint a picture for folks. If you're down in Los Angeles, you will find that many of the news stations have very tight relationships with the police. If not, they have police on staff. So when they do like car chases and all that, and they show that, you know, your traffic reporter was a former police officer or is a police officer. So you often see those uniformed individuals or former uniformed individuals right there on the staff to provide quote unquote expertise. Here it's a little bit different, but you often see that there is a media savviness to the police department. And I bring this up because what is often shown, and they do this around the country, is after the protests or after a shooting, they'll usually get a reporter and they'll say, let me take you to a training course and show you the type of pressure that the police are under. And it's like, you know, would you be able to tell who to shoot? And, you know, of course, the reporter can't. From my standpoint, that I look at that and dissect it, and I said, well, could a police officer write an article in 30 minutes and be on deadline? Because I can do that. You know, I went from the freeway, and, you know, when you all went there, and filed the story in about 20 minutes, because I can work under that pressure, right? I could take my tape and do my footage and the whole nine and file it. That's what I'm trained to do. One would think that they are trained to be able to walk in and go, oh, that's not a gun, that's a gun, and be able to do this. This is what our tax dollars pay for. Not a reporter to figure that out, but or average citizen, but you who is trained. So walk us through the training process. It seems like they got top-of-the-line training, endless resources. How is it that they're not able to determine that Stephon Clark is unarmed and maybe have a wallet in his hand versus I feared for my life and had to shoot him, or we're standing on the corner where Dario Hogg was shot. How are you not able to get a guy who is unresponsive as he's sleeping in his car on this corner that you have 15 officers that, and I can show you the pictures that surround his car and shoot him, right? So how is it that they're not able to determine?
Well, you know, I think there's a couple of pieces. I mean, one, I would say that I don't think they have all of the right training. I think we as the people need to be a part of that training, and we need to be talking about the kinds of training that we want for people who are going to be licensed to take away someone's life and freedom under the law. I think the idea that these people can be walking our streets without us requiring a level of training that should probably be some of the highest level of training and the most amount of time that one should have. It certainly should be longer than it takes to learn how to do somebody's hair. No disrespect to our cosmetologists, but it certainly should be longer than that. So they need to be getting better trained, you know, obviously. But it's also something when I was doing closer training with our local police department, you know, here in the Bay Area, that one person told me, he said, listen, Ben, you know, you all can pass policies and you can even bring about training. He said, but culture eats up policy for breakfast.
And what did you mean by that?
What he was alluding to was that the culture of our departments and the ways in which there has been a legacy over years makes it incredibly difficult for just a piece of policy alone or a training alone to be able to change culture, which is why we really believe that we've got to have all of these pieces moving at the same time with different bodies of work and fuel behind them. We need policy change. We need to have deep training that's happening for folks. We need to have deep accountability. And the public, we must assert our constitutional right to tell the state what we feel is appropriate for them to use with respect to keeping our community safe. The fact that we have ceded this kind of power to a government that has a history of genocide, of oppression, and destroying people's livelihood, it just is not intelligent.
In the AB bill 931, mm-hmm. or in the other bill, the
SB 1421.
1421. Is there any language that would have specific types of training that they are required to take?
Not
like today, Starbucks is closing all its stores, mm-hmm. right, to do training. You know, will they have any sort of level of training like that, or do they already do that, but the culture usurps it?
So in 2015, we had a similar moment like this coming after Ferguson and Freddie Gray, and we passed Assembly Bill 953, which is the Racial and Identity Profiling Act across California, of which I'm the co-chair of the advisory board right now, along with many other advocates. There's also law enforcement on that panel. And a part of the application of that law over 3 to 4 years, which we're now getting into it now, is both to collect all the data of any stop that happens in California. And we as a community had the opportunity to define what we wanted to define a stop as, what kind of information we want to gather. And then the other part of that implementation of that law is to ensure that racial profiling training, it has to be instituted in every department across California, you know, notwithstanding some of the very smaller departments. But those things are in place, but they take, every time you pass a law, it takes 3 to 4 to 5 years to actually implement it, which is
I didn't know that.
Yeah, which is why we've got to have community pressure, though, because it doesn't have to be that long. What gets it pushed out like that is the police unions and other people advocating and saying, we don't have all of this time to, you know, we need more time. It's going to cost more money. They tried to destroy us with AB 953. And I told the head of the police officers union then, I said, let me tell you, if you don't believe that there's racial profiling, then you should want us to pass this law so you can get the data to prove me wrong. These people are not for the life and the enrichment and the product and the production of our communities, which is why we've got to pass laws, but then we equally have got to be deeply involved with community oversight. And some of us are going to have to cross the bridge and train them and bring about the kind of voice and information we want in our department.
The average person does know that police get training, and what is touted as an advancement for them is that they train with Israel. And so the narrative is that, hey, Israel is, you know, their law enforcement is very efficient. They're under the most pressure, blah, blah, blah. That narrative has been sold to people. And so, you know, OPD and others have trained with them. So what does that training entail? And is that a step backwards?
It's absolutely a step backwards. It's in the wrong direction. You know, I was in the West Bank last May. I'll be back in the West Bank again in November this year. It's the wrong direction. All you got to do is go over into that region and begin to walk through the checkpoints and listen to the folks who are dealing with oppression in that region, and they will tell you that it is the wrong way. That is not the kind of policing that we need to be creating in this country. We need to be coming up with a new constitutional way of providing public safety and security for those who are most marginalized in our communities. And we as community, we've got some insight around this. As Brother John Jones says all the time, one of our Oakland activists and organizers, the people who are closest to the problem are also closest to the solution. And so we're going to have to be the ones that do more than just protests on the street. We're also going to have to figure out how we're coming inside the halls and the tables, making our voices loud, organizing and passing these laws, but not just pass the laws, but then stick around for 2 to 3 years to actually implement the laws, which means we're going to have to sit on boards. We're going to have to sit on commissions. And when we do that, that means some of us, you might be called a sellout. Folks might get pissed off at you. That's a part of the game, but everybody's got to play a role. We don't got to do the same thing. Everybody's got to do something.
As we close out, who are the main obstacles? I mean, you already mentioned the police unions, but are there particular lawmakers that have been sitting on the fence or have been, going in another direction? For example, we have, I think it's Ricardo Lara, right? Mm-hmm. Who I'm going to remember the position that he's running for, you know, but he's on the commercials now. But I'll never forget, you know, he's a brown man and, you know, and he's done some things, you know, for undocumented folks. But this is the same man that killed the first version of this bill, 1421, that would have opened up so we could see that. He was the one that wouldn't allow it to go into committee, you know. Mm-hmm. So he killed that, I remember, a couple of years ago. Here we are now wondering, are there similar type of folks that we need to be pressuring, looking out for, and what can anybody who's listening do?
You know, I don't think anyone has set themselves up as villains yet with whom we already don't know that they are villains. I will say that we all need to be calling our elected officials, your local senator, your local assembly member, and asking them, how are you voting on SB 1421 and AB 931? You know, I'm a resident here in Oakland, born and raised here in the Bay Area. And I think, you know, some of our folks, you know, Senator Skinner was the author for SB 1421. So obviously she is behind that. And from what I'm hearing, Assembly Member Bonta, as it ends up coming through the House, will be behind that. But I think we need to be pushing both of them on Assembly Bill 931.
I think they all need to know. And we know that some of these electeds have done some good work for us, and they've been great partners for that and represented the interests of the people. But I think that they should know that any elected official that stands against Assembly Bill 931 is sending a clarion call to people of color that we have no protection under the state by the police and no protection by them as elected officials. And if we hear any of them talking about they are concerned about the language, we should know that they are echoing the police chiefs and the police unions. So it's time for everybody to either put up or shut up. The reality is black, brown, and marginalized people will not continue to be brutalized and executed by law enforcement without there being any kind of protection under the law. And if these people are not going to support us, if they're going to make deals behind doors, and I'm not saying these folks have yet because the jury is still out, but if these folks are not going to support Assembly Bill 931, we all need to ensure that this is their last term in office.
What happens if they're black or brown? Like Carter Laura, you know, brown man who, you know, killed the first version of 1421, or the Congressional Black Caucus, when you had damn near all those members but five who voted for the Blue Lives Matter bill. They culturally appealed to us. They may do some good things. You know, they may say, let's give funding for the African American Museum. They may say Black Power, you know, Bobby Rush. You know, they may say I walk with Dr. King, John Lewis. But at the end of the day, they obviously went along with the police, or Keith Ellingson, who would sit up there and talk about we got to push back on Islamophobia, all signed and touted the Blue Lives Matter bill.
You know, my grandmother used to say all skin folk ain't kin folk. Right. And so the reality is, regardless as to what anyone's racial background, ethnicity is, we want to know that you're going to actually vote the interests of the people who are most marginalized. It's what I've been telling folks, even around the DA race. I've said, don't vote your own interests, because if you've not been formerly incarcerated, if you've not been impacted by the system, things might feel all right to you. Vote the interests of those who are most marginalized. And this is the same, I believe, rubric that we've got to bring to elected officials. If they are not voting the interests of those who are most marginalized in our communities, then they do not belong in office. They do not belong in positions where they can influence the lives of the people who will be most oppressed. And I think we can be very strong in our critique of the way in which people are performing without personally attacking them and going after them and trying to destroy their character. But we should be very sober to say that if you're not going to stand on behalf of those who are most oppressed, we must remove you from office at the federal level, at the state level, and obviously here at the local level. And so my hope, you know, for everyone out there, let's make sure that we are involved. I know we all got soccer games, basketball games, all kind of stuff folks are doing with your kids and trying to keep life. But we all need to make sure we're involved in this legislative session. Call your senator, call your assembly member. And more than that, even beyond that, I should say, vote June 5th. Because we got some DA races in front of us, and I'll tell you, while I speak on behalf of myself and not necessarily my organization, but as an Oakland resident in Alameda County, I need Pamela Price in charge of our district attorney's office to ensure that black and brown people have some agency in this region.
That's the voice of Ben McBride. Want to thank him for taking time out this afternoon on Hard Knock Radio. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Program, turn in for the real talk, don't stop. EMN at it again, Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, you just imitate simulation. Step into the zone, the Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah. On and down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kind of crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah.
Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Now Wolves.
Yeah.
Help
you. Hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee. Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat till they're ready from the steel grave. Say please, maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say a piece to their lovers, I need with a fee. Maybe some shade on your name in the street. You go, hey, it ain't David G.
Real Talk Radio. You and I rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast, Monday through Friday.
Sing it, girl.
West Coast Radio.
WD Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. Sitting in front of me is my man, Tony Coleman. You know Tony, longtime activist here, originally from San Francisco, but now over in Oakland, making things happen with his Bikes for Life shop and his cafe, which has been, you know, a hub for a lot of folks. And, you know, welcome to the show, Tony.
Right on, man.
What's been happening over in West Oakland? A lot of changes going on, and I know you all have been fighting the good fight to stay alive and to stay relevant there. But what does the terrain look like in the age of gentrification?
Man, interesting, man. I mean, it's, you know, without a doubt, it's heavily gentrified right now, right here in the Lower Bottoms across from the West Oakland Bar Station is the Lower Bottom neighborhood. It's been neglected for many, many years. I've been there like 20 years now. And I've seen a lot of, you know, I've seen a lot of just changes. I mean, a lot of even just like former crack houses are going for $1 million now. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, last year they was at $950, so it's not no surprise that now three of them just got sold for $1 million. So that's where we're talking about, $1 million homes right here in a working class neighborhood.
Who's buying them?
Well, you know, typically it's, you know, more affluent white folks, out from San Francisco, you know, that push from lack of housing in San Francisco or affordable housing or whatever is pushing a lot of folks out towards Oakland, and West Oakland being the first stop and central to the Bay Area to go in all directions is prime target.
How has that impacted you and your business and the work that you all have been doing? You work with a lot of youth. Obviously, you have your bicycle thing, and now we're at a point where there's bicycle lanes everywhere. Have you been able to take advantage of, you know, that move?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because we also working with the city and Transform to get folks involved with helping to develop some of these bike lanes. So we've been a part of that work. But yes, definitely the conversation is being controversial because who are you building them for has been kind of like the question. And so it's been an interesting conversation as you're trying to bring more and more people into the loop about to participate on where these lanes should be. And that's kind of like been the conversation. So
what's been the answer to that?
Well, you know, it's no surprise that folks are being pushed out and a lot of stuff is being redeveloped and is made to look shiny and pretty. And it's not typically as it's going across the country for the folks that have were there already. And so that's no different than West Oakland. And right now, I mean, it's hitting real hard. At first, you know, 10 years ago, you know what I'm saying, the bike shop, you know, we was kind of like in a position where we was getting both because, like, we got a lot of new money for, you know, with bikes and selling, you know, accessories and different things like that. So we was kind of, you know, it was kind of like an interesting thing. But now it's just the push. Like, we not – even the folks that's there, myself included, we not – against, you know, change and development and all like that. We just not at the expense of just pushing a lot of us out due to economics and being that's a messed up feeling, man. That's cold. You know what I mean? And even a lot of these folks, you know, when they first come, that first wave always be kind of like the, you know, more progressive or more left leaning folks. But, you know, we're like on that third wave, like how you hit the mission. You know, when that third wave hit, they'd be like, you guys are still here? Like, you know, kind of like an arrogant, kind of entitled, kind of like feeling, you know what I'm saying? They're not trying to like really socialize or have that kind of, you know, get involved with the community type thing. They trying to come and take over attitude or like, you know, or like looking at people of color as the bad part.
Yeah, the inconvenient folks that are still here.
That's right. And so we've been here on 7th Street, historical 7th Street that used to be dubbed also like along with Fillmore as the Harlem of the West. They had a lot of clubs and jazz and a lot of black middle class after the white flight. And so it's been neglected. And now, you know, now they want this now. They're coming back for this. And now they're pushing out folks. And so we've been here on this corner with Bikes for Life on 7th and Peralta, 1600 block of 7th Street. And the owners were going through a divorce. So we've been hit now because now after 2 years of neglecting, leaving us kind of like to fend for ourselves, now we've been bamboozled because the owner, I guess they split the property, and now the one that won the property, the husband, has come back in the mix immediately trying to get cash from us and coming every day getting cash while the whole time he was going to court behind the scenes saying that we were served. And by this time it's been in the later stages of an eviction. And so we got a stay of execution, but it was, man, that's cold right there. You know what I mean? Because here we are. We've been developing this property, you know what I mean, keeping it going before when.
But nobody wanted to even come there.
Nah. And then the next door spaces, like the cafe and everything, was like people were breaking in every day. And then, like, a lot of transient. It was like, it was really, like, we kept it going. You know, we so if anything, we kept, you know what I'm saying, you should be thanking us, you know, that you can come back in the mix. And then now to take our money and at the same time be putting in an eviction, that's kind of messed up. You know what I mean? So we got a stay of execution. We fighting it now. We having a mass meeting tomorrow at 1612 7th Street at Revolution Cafe. We need everybody to come. We got a good game plan. We got a good strategy right now. We just need people. You know, we need everybody to be involved. And we kind of like being, you know, our capacity has been dealing with a lot of multiple things, so it's kind of low bit. So we need more folks to come out and let's get this won, because it could be a good fight. It could be a good win for the movement in general, because it's never just been about us. It's been about the movement in general. How do we address this issue of displacement? How do we address this? And we want to be that part that helps bridge all the different housing organizations, all the different activists and different folks that may be working on these things, bring them all together.
Let me ask you this. You know, you've done work with the city. They know, obviously, because you don't bite your tongue about gentrification and the impact that it has on, you know, the folks you work with in the community that you live in. What are their resources and what are they capable of doing when situations like this arise? You know, are there legal things that they can do? Do they make phone calls? And are they able to say, hey, man, you know, don't make this move because we did A, B, and C, and D for you? Or is it just really, you know, if they got the money and they own the land, they can do what they want, whether you in city government or not? What's the real deal there?
Well, that's the thing. That's why we coming together tomorrow at 6 o'clock at 1612 7th Street, because the people have the power when we come together. So it may be things that may seem like that's not there that will appear once we get involved and once we demand what we want. And that's what we're going to do, because the no matter what they think or what they have or what they have on a piece of paper or what they a title they have from the bank, the people that's there, that's from there, is their land, is their property, their hometown. Everybody has a hometown, and we have a right to be able to stay in our hometown.
7th Street is a historical district. Has that been deemed historic district, which means
yes,
that it has certain types of provisions that prevent you from just rolling up and just changing the situation?
That's right. It's a historical landmark where we're at. I had to go through a whole lot just to do some development on our bike shop and, you know, to get a corner door. But I found the old footage where it was a corner door once before. And so then the Historical Society had to allow us to do it. But yes, from every nail to every, you know, screw, the Historical Society, when it's dubbed a historical landmark, it goes through these kind of like bureaucratic things. You know, some good, some not so good. But, you know, yes.
Does the historical makeup come into play? Does the Historical Society look and go, well, who actually are, you know, owning or working these properties? If it doesn't look like the history from the past, in this case, we're talking about the Harlem of the West, Black Harlem of the West, does that become a problem or a concern for the Historical Society?
Yeah, that's right. Because, I mean, that's why we're meeting tomorrow at 6 o'clock at 1612 7th Street at Revolution Cafe, because a lot of these different angles, it'd be a multifaceted campaign. It's always going to be a multifaceted thing, and a lot of these different things we're learning about as we go along. Even about land trust. I mean, that's been a conversation now that folks are talking about doing, and that's happening in San Francisco, where land trust, and we're being educated on that, where folks...
What is the land trust?
Yeah, land trust is where like a nonprofit or someone buys the building, and then the people, the residents of the building, they become owners, and instead of paying rent, they're paying like mortgage, and it's like for 100 years, so they're more, like, it'd be a reasonable amount where they can afford. But then they're no longer just tenants, they're actual owners, part owner of the building. So yeah, land trust is a good thing, and it's starting to be popular now, and we want to push that as well.
Do you find that people are willing to just sell? And is there a price tag that one can just go, you know what? $2 million, here you go. It's yours, and let's keep it moving.
Most definitely, because, you know, you have families that's been around. It's like third or fourth generations. And now as they're like the families are, you know, it's multiple owners, they would rather just, you know, cash out so they could get their piece. You know what I mean? And so that's what we're seeing. It's like you know, if it be like multi siblings that their parents had left them the house, they want to cash out while they're getting whatever they want for it. And so that they get split up the cash. And that's what's happening, instead of seeing themselves just keep the property in the family and keep it here in the neighborhood.
So, Tony, Tony Coleman here from Bikes for Life. We appreciate you taking time out again. Today is Tuesday. Tomorrow will be Wednesday. What time and where at, and what are you asking people to do?
Man, 6 o'clock tomorrow, Revolution Cafe, 1612 7th Street, across from the West Logan Bar Station. We need everybody who cares about this issue. I mean, all the barbecue, Becky, for all the folks that care about this issue, we making a stand. This is a stand right now. I mean, we want Kat running for mayor. We want her to be our next mayor. We want all the folks to care about Oakland that's from here, people of color, and all the folks who care about equality and just keeping the culture the same, because that's what we want. We want to keep this culture, because you take away the people, you take away the culture. And we're meeting tomorrow at 6 o'clock, because we're demanding that we're going to fight to the very end. We're not just going to lay down and allow them to take one more spot. This was the last visible spot in West Oakland that we had where we could share our culture and where we can come together. We can't let them just take it, and nobody don't do nothing from the hood, and nobody don't do nothing from the community.
So there you have it. Tomorrow, 6 o'clock, 7th in Peralta, Bikes for Life, Revolution Cafe. Also, one other thing, Tony, what's your number? What's the phone number if people want to get more information?
510-444-7746. That's 510-444-SPIN.
There you go. Once again, the number?
510-444-7746. 510-444-SPIN.
There you have it. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Hard enough paying the rent, trying to stay above cement or not doing a stint. Look at the percent of brothers that sent to serve time. Around the world, the government is doing worse crimes. It's setting traps to make felons for a third time. No jobs, no justice, what's the frame of mind? Nothing to lose, ain't afraid to die. Never show your worth or how to address the hurt inside. Every homicide I see reported, feel like a portion of myself departed. Could it have been avoided? It's more guns out here, the countries that it's wars in. We need conflict resolution in these school courses. Tired of selling for the short end, and what candle can defy the darkness?
Shed light, lead the path, illuminate through the night. Yeah. Shed light, it's the new dawn, clear vision for your sight, so open up your eyes and see forever.
reality, no matter how many fancy restaurants sprout up. The menus don't cater to the issues around us. Good for the nightlife in uptown, the lights bright, but the hood out the eyesight, left in the dark. First Friday, yeah, cultivate the arts. While we can't have the same in Serenity Park, could be a spark for a family hit hard, living next to a crack house. Day-to-day shootouts, younger cutting almost caught when I sent the cool out. Said that's just part of the game, they toss the rules out. Wild out here like a pack full of wolves, ripping through a full moon now. Tell it two cities, the pretty and the gritty, the welcome and neglected, the prosperous and profitless. We got some issues to address, can't build a part of the city and neglect the rest. I came to shed light, lead the path, illuminate through the night, yeah. Shed light, shed light. It's the new dawn, clear vision for your sight. So open up your eyes and see forever. Town in exposure, out of town is coming in flocks looking like vultures to respect the culture. Grass greener on this side, still full of cobras. Snatch your iPhone, laptop, it's a whole world. Rent too high, we can barely afford. We're moving out to Tracy, Antioch, or Livermore. We're trying to keep the A's in town, they like them homeless. We need access to affordable homes first. Single mothers need work, young fathers need ways to provide. Yeah, it's a whole lot of hurt, still a whole lot of love and pride. Before the whole city get gentrified and we end up victims of genocide. If I die tonight, look back on my life, hope this ass still for something there wrapped in town right here. Shed light, shed light, lead the path, illuminate through the night, yeah. Shed light, shed light. It's the new dawn, clear vision for your sight. So open up your eyes and see for
Radio, East, West, North, radio, South, radio, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs, one love. We know where y'all at. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping hard knock radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the hard knocks, learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks.
Up and down the radio dial this spring, many stations have been asking for your support. We all present our best case for your hard-earned dollar and loyalty. Real Talk? Unlike the others, KPFA doesn't take any corporate money or underwriting. We're truly independent, and we want no one looking over our shoulder. Yes, the cost of independence is dangerous. We walk a high wire with no corporate safety net to ensure we'll be here tomorrow. Yet, for 69 years, KPFA has been supported 100% by you, a allowing us to speak truth to power and lift the voices of resistance, persistence, and disruption. Our drive is over, and we thank you for your generous support. If you were planning to donate, please do at kpfa.org. Our premiums will be up for another week. Or become a member or a KPFA ally and join the fight for the health, wealth, and justice for our community. Thanks again for keeping KPFA as vigilant as always.
94.1 KPFA, 89.3 KPFA.